We ask now that you would give your careful and your prayerful attention to our pastor as he brings to us the message this evening. Brother Gordon.
Thank you, Brother Don. Enjoyed those songs. I enjoyed the way you sang them tonight. I had given some thought about tonight concerning those things in which I had a desire to bring to you tonight. Since it is the 4th of July and we don't have a program tonight, my sermon is going to be focused on that thought. The 4th of July, our independence, and all that it means, hopefully, to us today. America, I don't know, each one of you has to have something in your heart or mind when you hear that word. You're young and maybe not have an opportunity to experience enough life. There might not be an emotion there. But if you do have an emotion, there's a direct connection to our God. And I believe it very firmly that anyone that has a deep, strong commitment to this land and its principles, there is that root of God in that foundation. There has to be. Our forefathers, our first father of this nation, made a statement, and later on I'm gonna read that statement that would prove those words to be true. A nation under God, founded of God, that we might have that freedom to choose liberty. And in the words of one of our presidents, President Lincoln, with that liberty we could choose to commit suicide as a nation and forfeit our liberties. And it's no different within our own lives in the gospel of Jesus Christ. God holds out that same, or that offering is there, that you may have liberty or that you may have damnation, which is no liberty. Constrained by that law that God has so ordained from the very beginning of time. In the Book of Mormon, we find that I'm going to be reading a few of the familiar scriptures out of the 1 Nephi in the 3rd chapter, speaking of that call that was heard spiritually to those who came here. But these are the prophetic words telling about that event. Here in Nephi in the 3rd chapter, verses 145 through 149. And it came to pass that I looked and beheld many waters, and they divided the Gentiles from the seed of my brethren. And it came to pass that the angel said unto me, Behold, the wrath of God is upon the seed of thy brethren. And I looked and beheld a man among the Gentiles who was separated from the seed of my brethren by the many waters. And I beheld that the Spirit of God, that it came down and brought upon the man. And he went forth upon the many waters, even unto the seed of my brethren who were in the promised land. And it came to pass that I beheld the Spirit of God, that it wrought upon other Gentiles. And they went forth out of captivity upon the many waters. All of you know that we look at Christopher Columbus as that person that God's Spirit rested upon. In many things, we can see how the Spirit of God worked upon the children of men to bring forth those things that God had foreordained. In some ignorance, but with a knowledge that something greater than them was guiding them for a purpose. I don't know about your life, but there's been those times in my life where there's been where I have felt that for whatever reason there was something that God was directing me in a certain way. I didn't know or understand the full meaning of it. But as I followed that path and after the event, I found that I understood. God gave me the understanding of why he took me down that path and the meaning of it. And so we today can see the meaning of what that prophecy was and the meaning that expressed itself upon Christopher Columbus to make that journey. We find that the significance of the journey wasn't that he found America per se, because he really landed south of the continent of the United States in the Bahamas, but it opened the path that others might follow. And that's where our progenitors took that journey. There's some of you in this audience who has progenitors, relatives long ago that was part of that. The pilgrims. A remnant of that seed that came across the many waters. And they sit here in this audience today. As we knelt in prayer, the Spirit of the Lord rested upon me and to bring this thought out. The significance of this remnant and the role that it'll play in America in these last days. The importance to understand that the same values, the same desires and ideals to be a free people, to worship their God, to have his blessings upon this nation according to the promises of God continue from those small group that started, that landed on the shores and committed their lives that they might be men free to pursue God, to do the will of God, that formed this nation, its ideals. Our first president had made a statement in his farewell speech. His speech was fairly long, but there were several things in there that go to what I'm trying to say today. In the 10th paragraph, it says, "For this ye have every inducement of sympathy and interest, citizens." He's speaking of those who were there, he was speaking to, and as a whole. And then he says, "Citizens by birth or by choice of a common country, that country has a right to concentrate your affections, the name of American, which belongs to you, in your national capacity, must always exalt the just pride of patriotism more than any appellation derived from local discriminations. With slight shades of difference, ye have the same religion, manners and habits, and political principles. You have in a common cause fought and triumph together. The independence and the liberty you possess are the work of joint counsels and joint efforts of common dangers, sufferings, and successes." Now, I tried to read it slow, and I hope you got some of that, what he was trying to say. He said, with slight shades of differences, there was different religions there. I mean, different Protestantisms that were there. But there was, the main theme was Christ, the foundation as they understood it. There was the Judeo-Christian concepts was rooted in their heart. You have the same religion, manners, and habits, political principles. And with that, they had that common goal to fight against that which was wrong. And they triumphed over it because God blessed them. Where they became independent, with liberty, without a king, and they possessed the land. They were able to, through their efforts, common dangers, giving up land, giving up family, suffering, afflictions of all kinds of things, that they might be men free to serve their God. Sorry to say, we don't have that today in the United States. That statement is not true today. The only time that statement is true, for the most part, is what I believe God gave me to understand when we knelt in prayer. That common root with these people. Think about it. Even those who profess Christ don't have that knowledge and understanding of what we have in the Book of Mormon. The things that I just read, that promise, there would be a people that would follow a calling to come and possess a land. There are those who do it in their ignorance because they know by the Spirit of the Lord that the things that are right and the things that are wrong, but they can't explain it other than this word called patriotism. The true root of it that our president and first father of our nation spoke of, that I read. The first settlers were conscientiously thought of themselves as a people called into a continuation of the covenant relationship with God and with one another, which Israel had entered into. They saw themselves as called into their new promised land in order to found a new Israel, which would be a light to the whole world. A city set upon a hill was how John Winthrop, the first governor of Massachusetts, put it. There's not too many people in the Christian world that espouses that, except for us, those who have an understanding because of the Book of Mormon. That's how unique we are today. And it's important for you to understand that uniqueness in thought and understanding, that God blessed you with that understanding. That, like I said, there are those that live in this nation that has that deep-rooted feeling, but they do so in their ignorance. And I pray that one day they'll understand that. They do have a connection. I don't know about you, but I have this inside connection with Israel. There's a common bond in my heart for Israel. God has placed it there. And I know he's done that to you. And there's a purpose behind it. Because there's a role that we're going to play in these last days as progenitors of those first group of people that came to this land. Because their mission wasn't complete. It was just the beginning. And we're here in the latter days, or the last days, to complete that mission. To bring that record to the remnant of Israel, to be that tool in God's hands to help Israel to understand who they are and the God that they need to serve in these last days. When a group of people, no matter how small or ordinary, was willing to die out to their selfish desires, the life which came out of that death was immeasurable and continued to affect lives far into the future. And how true that statement is, and how true that statement is going to be. I feel that there is going to be much required of us in these next few years. I'm unsettled in my heart with my own life, and I know it is there, and Satan is working very hard to destroy what God has brought here today. In 1 Nephi, in the third chapter, verse 152, it says, "And it came to pass that I, Nephi, beheld that the Gentiles who had gone forth out of captivity, did humble themselves before the Lord, and the power of the Lord was with them. And I beheld that their mother Gentiles were gathered together upon the waters and upon the land also to battle against them. And I beheld that the power of God was with them, and also that the wrath of God was upon all those that were to gather together against them to battle. And I, Nephi, beheld that the Gentiles had gone out of captivity were delivered by the power of God out of the hands of all other nations. And it came to pass that I, Nephi, beheld that they did prosper in the land." It should be no misunderstanding that this little group of people that declared themselves free of Britain's tyranny in 1776, that they were going to be able to do it of their own accord. That was not going to be. As it was prophesied, that the wrath of God was upon all those that were gathered together against them to battle, it was the case. Britain was fighting wars in other places, fighting against Spain and against France, and there was different allies going and coming, and there was all kinds of things going on at that time. And those who dedicated their life for that desire to be free, and that persevered through that period of time, it was almost 10 years. God brought them through that trial. There were those who lost their homes, lost their lands, lost their businesses, and suffered great loss in different things, physical, family, because they made that choice. But God blessed them in the end. You know, you hear it time and time again, history repeats itself. But in a sense, man repeats himself in the way he walks with God. And we see it throughout the scripture. And we are now at that advent of time when those sacrifices are going to be made. They're going to have to be made by the group of people that I see here and those that are espoused to that, of carrying the Book of Mormon and the Bible to the world. We're going to be no different than those. And it's going to be very difficult. And it's going to try our faith. In 2 Nephi, in the 7th chapter, Starting with the 17th verse, that's on page 113. It says, "But behold, this land, saith God, shall be a land of thine inheritance, and the Gentiles shall be blessed upon the land," speaking of the house of Israel. "And this land shall be a land of liberty under the Gentiles, and there shall be no king upon the land who shall raise up unto the Gentiles. And I will fortify this land against all other nations. And he that fighteth against Zion shall perish, saith God. And he that raiseth up a king against me shall perish. For I, the Lord, the King of heaven, will be their king, and I will be a light upon them forever that hear my words." That's the caveat. Those that will hear his words, that blessing will be true. So we find that, we find that the first time in our nation's history since in the 40s when our nation's enemies tried to infiltrate America, that we had the enemies of our country take 3,000 lives in one fell swoop. That's not a coincidence. And I know that if you would say openly that that was God's way to try and wake us up as a nation, it would probably be contended with. There would be those that would say yes, and I'm afraid there was going to be many that would say no. A wake-up call to this nation that the protection, the divine protection of God, was being lifted from this country because of wickedness and because they have turned their backs on the God of this land. There should be a fear and dread in the hearts of the children of men across this nation this day because of the things that are going on in this land today concerning what they're doing. Are those that represent us and those of us that are allowing them continue down that path? There was in paragraph 27 of our President George Washington's farewell speech, he made this statement: "Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. In vain would that man claim the tribute of patriotism who should labor to subvert these great pillars of human happiness. These firmness props of the duties of men and citizens, the mere politician, equally with the pious man, ought to respect and to cherish them, which I fear they don't. A volume could not trace all their connections with private and public felicity. Let it simply be asked, where is the security for property, for reputation, for life, if the sense of religious obligation deserts the oaths, which are the instruments of the of investigation of courts and justice? Let us with caution indulge the supposition that morality can be maintained without religion. Your courts today are trying to espouse that very thing. Our father, George Washington, said, "You can't do it. It's a truism. Whatever may be conceded to the influence of refined education on minds of peculiar structure, reason, and experience, both forbid us to expect that national morality can prevail in exclusion of religious principle. And when he says religious principle, he is speaking of that same common bond that he had said in paragraph 10, that foundation of the Judeo-Christian beliefs and principles that founded this nation. It was the intent of God that we be set up as a free nation, to be able to worship God. There was, in his speech, in George Washington's speech, he alluded, I think he said, he had spent 46 years of service to his country. Now, Senator Byrd had passed away. He was 91 or whatever. And there's been a lot to say about his service to his country. But I would contend that if I put those 46 years of George Washington up against Senator Byrd's service, it would pale to compare. Never once do I believe I read that Senator Byrd gave, his life earnings to support his cause in the sense of freedom. Washington bought the uniforms and a lot of the supplies with his own money, that his men wouldn't starve, that they might have something to protect them from the weather, his own money. That was his commitment. In his early years, he led his men, and he was known to be a very pious and gentleman with principles. He refused and in fact rebuked those who wanted to set him up as a king. He could have. He could have easily said, yeah, it's payback time. I'll be king. But I want to read to you his last two paragraphs within his farewell speech that would help you to understand what man he is. It says, though in reviewing the incidents of my administration, I am unconscious of intentional error, I am nevertheless too sensible of my defects not to think it probable that I may have committed many errors. Whatever they may be, I fervently beseech the Almighty to avert or mitigate the evils to which they may tend. I shall also carry with me the hope that my country will never cease to view them with indulgence, and that after 45 years of my life dedicated to its service with an upright zeal, the faults of incompetent abilities will be consigned to oblivion, as myself must soon be to the mansions of rest, meaning his eternal rest. Relying on his kindness in this as in other things, and actuated by that fervent love towards it, which is so natural to a man who views it in the native soil of himself and his progenitors for several generations, I anticipate with pleasing expectation that retreat in which I promise myself to realize with alloy the sweet enjoyment of partaking in the midst of my fellow citizens once of good laws under a free government, the ever-favored object of my heart. And the happy reward is, I trust, of our mutual cares and labors and dangers. His ultimate desire, like you read in the 14th chapter of John, that Christ says, I have many mansions and I go to prepare a place for you, that was in his heart. But as a parallel, that was in his heart for you and I today, to live in this country. Influenced of good laws under a free government. Under God. So as in the mansions of heaven. And that was his desire. There is a commonality that comes through history when we're able to read and to see, to get a little insight of those who were before us, who helped build this nation. As I get older, I appreciate more that struggle that they had and understanding of that dedication and the strength that God gave them to endure. And to make a difference in our lives. America. America wasn't totally free after the war. There was a period of time where it was about 20 years or so that there was still the struggling of becoming a new nation, the transition of the different individuals into power. And one of the co-founders, John Madison, was president. There was another war, which helped to solidify us as being a nation. And in some cases, it was a wake-up call to those who took for granted the liberty that they were living in at the time. For many of those who fought in the war, of the Revolutionary War, they had grown older and had passed away by then. Many of them. So there was a new generation that had been raised up, living under this freedom, pursuing their desires in the land. But the job wasn't done. America still had enemies that wanted to, had other designs for it, different than what God had intended for them to fulfill. France and Britain both were seizing ships in neutral water. That meant our ships, taking the sailors and conscripting them to work for whatever navy that took those ships, either the French or the British. They were still fighting in Spain and squabbling over different things. And so you still had those enemies of God against this land. And it culminated in this war we call 1812. Now, I would have to confess to you today that I was pretty ignorant of this last bit of history, either due to my education or just not looking into it, and I should have. Because there's some things in there. There's evidence in this war that lasted, it was 1812 to 1815 or something like that. that you find the divine intervention of God preserving this nation from two superpowers. And you find that us as a nation were kind of emboldened because we thought we were pretty powerful and maybe took advantage of that freedom that we had. But there were those who were in charge that made the difference. Because John Madison, our president, he saw handwriting on the wall. And there were several times in 1812 and 1813 that he called for a nationwide fast and prayer for the concerns of what was going on at the time. I think if I read probably a little bit more, I could probably get a little more insight of what John Madison, who was part of the framer of the Constitution, that wrote the federal, helped write many of the federal papers, Federalist Papers. He was one of the chief architects of the Constitution. He saw something that he didn't like. But he knew who to call upon to help him in that situation. And he happened to be our commander-in-chief at that time. So he called two national days of prayer, one in 1812 and 1813, specifically for these things, that God would help him and help the nation deal with this situation of the French and the British. What they wanted to do was to finally take care of these colonists and occupy it. And we find that during the course of time in 1814 that the enemies of this nation marched onto the capital and burn it to the ground. That was August 24th, 1814. Many of the people just barely got out of there in time when that British army was coming in. And to the point where when they came in and occupied the Capitol building, there was food set on the table for the president. Guess what? Who do you think ate that food? It was the British. The British military sat down and had their dinner, and then they set out to burn down the Capitol. But this was in retaliation to what we had done, where we had gone up to what is now known as Toronto earlier, a year ago, and sacked it and burnt a lot of the buildings down there. The intent that we were doing this was to try and to break that bond that Britain had on this continent. All those things were in John Madison's mind when he called for this fasting and prayer that God would intervene in this new nation and help him in this struggle. The interesting thing about this story is that after the fires got started that evening, there was this storm that was brewing. The local people could see it coming. The British didn't fully understand what kind of storm this was. And a tornado or a real high wind came and set down right in the middle of Washington, D.C. To the point where actually there was cannon that was actually lifted up and tossed around. There was parts of the building that fell. It killed more of the British than what the American troops did with their own guns. And the British left the capital city, and that storm, with its torrential rain that followed, put out the fires. And they left. Soon after that, John Madison came back and started to restore order. Now, why am I telling you all this? I believe that that was part of God's work, answering Madison's prayer, because really it set Madison up where he became more influential within those constituents, with the people. He rode for 4 days trying to rally the people, to help them to understand the purpose that of what he was trying to do and what they needed to do as a nation to stay a free people. Consequently, the British focused their attentions down south to Philadelphia, Fort McHenry. They spent a whole night bombarding that fort, but they were prepared for the British, those who were in that area. They said there was something like 1,500 rounds, 220 pounds or more, with gunpowder in the middle of the cannon and with fuses that would go off. They were intended to, once they landed, to explode and do more damage, but a lot of them went off in the air. We sing a song today that epitomizes that event, the Star-Spangled Banner. And again, there was really, it was a call to an idea. That's the leaders that went there to fortify and to prepare for that war. They knew that there was something more that they could instill in the people. And that was the goodness of the fight and the cause. And they knew in their hearts that they would have divine intervention to help them. And I'm still waiting for that type of leadership for the trials that this nation is facing today. I think we all are. One of the things that sounds kind of simple, but a year earlier, it was the commanding general of the fort had asked that a very, very large flag be made, that it might fly over the fort, that all of whoever would float into that harbor would be able to see it. It was a huge flag, 30-some feet, 40-some feet. I think remnants of it is still here today. We can see. I know that different ones of Michelle and her troops have been hitting the veterans and asking them how they feel about the flag, what they think when they see it. It embodies everything that God helps me to understand that is right, true. A people that desires to serve God. Those who went on the Crusades, they carried the cross. To me, carrying the flag epitomizes that in the sense of all the good. The cross at that time was all that was bad. but the flag. It's all that was as good. It comes from God. There is, in the book of Ether, a very familiar scripture, the first chapter, verses 30 through 35, and it's to all who live on this land, no matter who they are, and what they believe. And he had sworn in his wrath unto the brother Jared that whoso should possess this land of promise from that time henceforth and forever should serve him, the true and only God, or they should be swept off when the fullness of his wrath should come upon them. And now we can behold the decrees of God concerning this land, that it is a land of promise, and whatsoever nation shall possess it shall serve God, or they shall be swept off when the fullness of his wrath shall come upon them. And the fullness of his wrath cometh upon them when they are ripened in iniquity. For behold, this is a land which is choice above all other lands. Wherefore he that doth possess it shall serve God, or shall be swept off. For it is the everlasting decree of God, and it is not until the fullness of iniquity among the children of the land that they are swept off. And this cometh unto you, O ye Gentiles, that ye may know the decrees of God, that ye may repent and not continue in your iniquities until the fullness come, that ye may not bring down the fullness of the wrath of God upon you, as the inhabitants of the land have hitherto done. Behold, this is the choice land, and whatsoever nation shall possess it shall be free from bondage and from captivity and from all other nations under heaven, if they will but serve the God of the land, who is Jesus Christ, who will both have been manifested by the things which we have written. You know, I think about it like in Sunday school, we were in the book of Ether, and we know them to be the Olmec people. There are things that we don't know about them, all the things that they knew, all of the technologies. There are things that we have people scratching their head, how did they do this? They don't know. And with all that understanding and things that God had given them, they transgressed that law. And the promises of God were fulfilled. No different than what we see from the Inca and the Aztec. And the remnant of the seed of the Lamanites, the warring tribes that were here when our forefathers came to this land and used us as instruments of sweeping them off this land, relegating them into small parcels of land compared to what they had. That promise is on our heads today. I trust and pray that we are able to understand the plan of God, and that was set long ago, to be able to carry those two records like we find in 2 Nephi in the first chapter. Get over here. Speaking of the Americas, starting with the 18th verse. Wherefore I, Lehi, have obtained a promise that inasmuch as those whom the Lord God shall bring out of the land of Jerusalem shall keep his commandments, they shall prosper upon the face of this land. And they shall be kept from all other nations, that they may possess this land unto themselves. And if it so be that they shall keep his commandments, they shall be blessed upon the face of this land, and there shall none to molest them, nor take away the land of their inheritance, and they shall dwell safely in this land. The Book of Mormon and the Bible are those two records that we're going to be carrying to them. And it's our job, it's our destiny to be able to fulfill the will of God that they might have that understanding. And that we might be able to live in this land of freedom with them in Zion. May God bless us in that endeavor.